87. Tariana. They left the village at dawn, backs weighed down with the supplies Marcus had purchased with silver taken from her hair. It was the last time they slept in a proper bed, neither of them willing to risk encountering a Legion patrol. Their nights were spent huddling together in a tent. When they needed supplies, Marcus went into the markets alone, leaving her to worry until he reappeared, and to continue to worry as he silently brooded, even more sparing on conversation than he normally was. As much as the events in the village had grieved her, they seemed to have a more lasting impact on Marcus, despite them being no revelation to him. But no matter how much she pressed him, he refused to say anything beyond that all individuals living within the Empire were subject to its laws, just as they were subject to the punishments for breaking them. But though he said the words with conviction, the way he'd go silent for hours afterwards, his eyes distant, made her certain that he was questioning those laws. Or perhaps his own role in enforcing them. Except, what choice did he have? Grand title he might possess, but she knew he was nothing more than an indentured servant to the Senate, doomed to work off the debt that had been forced upon him as a child, his freedom withheld for another 25 years, if he lived that long. To defy the Senate's orders meant punishment. If the offense were great enough, he'd be hanged for treason. He was a slave to the will of a group of men he hated, and there was no escape other than death. Except, perhaps, for one. The thought burned in her mind as they traveled south, each passing day growing warmer, even as it brought them closer to Celandriel. Closer to the moment when Marcus would once again be a legionnaire. To the moment he'd again be the Empire's tool for conquering the West. To the moment when they'd part ways, and she and her freed people would join the armies of the West in the fight against the Cell incursion. To the moment he'd cease to be the young man she loved, and once again be the enemy she needed to defeat.
"The Savio," Marcus said, rather unnecessarily, as they stopped next to a wide river. "We'll travel west along it until we reach a village. Then we should be able to buy a boat that will take us the rest of the journey."
Sliding down the bank, Tariana pulled off her coat and stuck her hands in the cold water, relishing the feel of it running over her skin. The weather had improved with each passing day, and it was warm enough for a bath to be possible without risk of freezing to death. Especially given that this far upstream, the Savio was clean enough that she could see the rocks under its swift running surface, though it would grow fouler the closer they got to the ocean. Closing her eyes, she imagined she could feel the strength of the sea reaching out to her, calling her home. It had been months since she'd stood on a beach, longer still since she'd stood on the deck of a ship. And though a riverboat was a far cry from the Quincense, she rose and eagerly started downstream. It didn't take long to find one of the countless small settlements that made their living off the river.
"Circle round and wait downstream," Marcus said. "We can only assume that Cassius is still capturing any Marin he can, and now that we are in Celandor itself, we shouldn't risk anyone getting close enough to see your eyes."
Grimacing, she nodded, and after giving him a list of supplies, she circled round the town and sat down on the bank to wait. Perhaps an hour later, Marcus drifted downstream toward her, awkwardly steering a riverboat that had seen many years and looked ready to retire on the bottom of the river.
"Nice boat," she said, wading out and then pulling herself aboard. "I hope it was free."
"Was all I could afford after buying your supplies,"
he countered, handing her a package.
So, don't complain.
Taking hold of the rudder, she waited as the current took hold of them before easing toward the center of the Savio. A temperate wind caught at her hair, sending her ragged braids streaming out behind her as they sped downstream. Only once she'd had her fill at the helm did she say, "Think you can manage this without crashing us for a few hours?" Turning from his contemplation of the passing landscape, Marcus shrugged, then walked carefully to where she stood, taking the rudder. After giving him a few instructions, she retrieved the package of supplies he'd purchased. Then, sitting with her legs crossed, she went to work on unraveling her hair. It wasn't a task she ever did herself. Only her Aunt Yetta touched her hair, and that was one of the reasons she'd delayed removing the braids for as long as she had. Because it would be like giving up the last thing she had of her family. Except not only were they grown out and fuzzy and unraveling in several places, it wouldn't be long until she was reunited with the Quincents and her crew. And she knew that if her aunt saw the current state of Tariana's hair, that she'd never hear the end of it. It was arduous work, and her back and neck and arms ached by the time she finished unbraiding. Her muscles protested as she set to combing out the handfuls of hair that had come loose, tossing it into the river to float away. She could feel Marcus's eyes on her as she worked, and as always, she had to fight the desire to go to him, to wrap her arms around his neck and lose herself in the pleasure of his touch, because it was the only time she could forget that they were racing toward the moment they'd part ways forever. Her eyes burned at the thought, and she rubbed at them furiously before filling a bucket with river water and setting to the task of washing her hair with soap that smelled like lavender, then massaging its length with oil that smelled of the same. Rebraiding it herself wasn't a remote possibility, so instead, she wrapped it tight to her head with the scarf of indigo cotton that Marcus had selected, hoping it would serve to keep her hair out of her face until her aunt could set her to rights. "You look like your mother." She jumped at Marcus's voice. They often went a long time without talking, but the silences were easy and comfortable, made more so by the fact neither of them went long without touching each other, the brush of his hand against hers as they walked, never failing to make her heart skip, then race, always, always wanting more. "I don't want to give you up."
"You'll see her soon," he added, "and the rest of your people."
She'd been separated from them for so long. "If she even wants to see me." Not sure if you recall, but she wasn't overly pleased at some of the decisions I made.
"I remember."
Chewing on the insides of her cheeks, she said, "When you told me I'd lost my chance to see her the morning we left, I wanted to kick you in the balls. I hated you so much. But that wasn't the reason, was it? She told you she didn't want to see me, didn't she?" Marcus's throat moved as he swallowed, his eyes on the river before them.
"People say things they regret when they're angry, Tariana. She's had a lot of time to think, and she may see your choices differently, having spent so many months a prisoner."
"You don't know her. She's stubborn."
"Sounds like someone else I know."
Tariana frowned, never having considered herself anything like her mother except in appearance. Captain Tessia was rigid and married to their people's ways, whereas Tariana had always felt drawn beyond the confines of her ship to people who were different than she was. It had caused endless conflict between them over the years, and some days she wondered if her mother had the right of it. If Tariana had never befriended Lydia, none of this would be happening. "And I'd never have met Marcus." It was a selfish thought, and she shoved it away. "With my luck, I'll have gone through all this to get my people free, and they'll cast me out for it.
You didn't do it because you thought they'd appreciate you for it,
Marcus said.
You did it because you believed it the right choice, because you wanted to protect them.
Or because I couldn't stomach having my fingernails ripped off. He flinched, then shook his head.
I think if you'd believed your mother's path the right one, you'd have stomached far worse than that. It's easier to suffer for something you believe in.
She opened her mouth to ask when the last time was that he'd been tortured, but paused. Marcus had suffered tremendously as part of the Empire's desire for power and domination, yet she knew that he didn't believe in it. Did he endure it simply because he had no other choice? Or was there another reason? Not for the first time, she wished she could see inside his head, because every instinct told her that there were secrets that he kept, and not just from her. When they send you back with more legions and more resources, what will you do?
What I'm told.
His jaw tightened.
If I don't, the Senate will execute me, and someone equally qualified will take command. My defiance changes nothing.
She remembered what Amarin had told her in the command tent, about not striking a blow against one senator, but against the Empire itself. Was such a thing even possible? Have you ever wondered, she asked, what you might achieve if you fought for something you believed in? Marcus didn't answer for a long time, then finally said,
I don't know what I believe in anymore.
He pulled on the rudder, sending the boat drifting into one of the endless tributaries of the Savio.
It's starting to get dark. We should find somewhere to make camp.